back, WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. It is positively all-star break. A little later than normal. I mean, we got all sorts of things moving around on the calendar. And I would say for all of us here, football season, it's right here, but baseball season, very, very much in progress, including a draft on Sunday night. We're sending an all-star West this week, and then there will be Yankee games in the future. Luke Jones joins us now. We are going to get back to the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We're doing it. We're doing 31 crab cakes in 31 days. The Maryland Lottery is involved. Our friends at Window Nation. I got a cool Window Nation shirt. I haven't worn this one. It's a little big, but it's soft. It's nice in here. And they've got some special deals I'll be telling you about this month, as well as our friends at Goodwill and the Restaurant Association of Maryland. We got a city restaurant week going on this week. But I tell you what, we got a baseball team of relevance here, Luke. And, certainly when they stink as bad as they stunk and they're picking 1-1s, we will be following the career of Drew Jones for a little while now, won't we?
Yeah, no. Well, seeing if Drew Jones ends up being a better pick than Jackson Holliday, sure. But I think there's just a lot of excitement with the intersection of what's happening at the major league level for the Orioles right now, going into the All-Star break at 500. Yes, disappointing weekend series at the Trop, unable to get a series win, but nice comeback victory on Saturday too, which would have saved off the sweep, when you kind of look at it that way. But you have that in conjunction with Gunnar Henderson playing in the Futures game on Saturday night in LA, who is rapidly ascending the top 100 prospects list around baseball. I mean, I believe Baseball Pipeline has him as a, top five, top six guy at this point. So he's almost taken that place of Adley Rutschman as the prospect list go. Of course, Henderson being a shortstop or third baseman. So he plays in the Futures game on Saturday, and then Sunday night, the Orioles, as you mentioned, have the first overall pick and they take Jackson Holliday, and there'll be plenty of comparisons made with Drew Jones. And I saw some people that were complaining about it, which I just think is hilarious, because more so than the NFL draft, more so than the NBA draft or the NHL draft, I mean, you want to talk about a crapshoot, it's the baseball draft. So when you select someone who has the kind of bloodline that Jackson Holliday has, with Matt Holliday being a former seven-time All-Star, his uncle being the coach at Oklahoma State, his grandfather was the former head baseball coach at Oklahoma State, there's that pedigree. And it's funny because we think of Mike Elias, we think of modern baseball, all about analytics. And look, it's so much of it is based on analytics and gathering information. But as we saw with Adley Rutschman being the son of a coach, as far as just growing up in the game, Jackson Holliday in a different way, because you're talking about being the son of a major leaguer and the second son ever to be selected first overall, the first being Ken Griffey Jr., being the son of a former major leaguer. So there's a lot of pedigree there. There's a lot to the bloodline there, but it's just a lot of excitement because Jackson Holliday, whether you like Drew Jones, whether this was a Coke or Pepsi situation, as it felt like it was for the Orioles, a little bit different this time around compared to Colton Cowser last year, compared to Heston Kerstad 2 years ago, where there isn't expected to be a discount here to reallot the bonus, the slot bonus money. So this is a case where the Orioles fell in love with Jackson Holliday with the huge season he had as a senior this year in Oklahoma. And instead of him going off to college, he's 1-1. And the Orioles, as we're talking about them getting better at the major league level, this is one of those guys that you hope is about sustaining being good at the major league level 3, 4, 5 years down the road. So we've reached that point of the rebuild where we're seeing the fruits of what they've done with Rutschman. We're going to see Grayson Rodriguez and DL Hall. We're going to see Gunnar Henderson and Jordan Westberg and Kyle Stowers. So these guys that were selected on Sunday night, led by Jackson Holliday first overall, the next wave, or maybe two waves from now, I guess I should say, as far as if the Orioles are going to make this work and they're going to be a playoff caliber team and they're going to be competing for pennants in the coming years, we're going to see Jackson Holliday arrive at some point and augment what they're doing. Or the other possibility is perhaps he's someone a couple years from now, you're trading to acquire an ace at the trade deadline or in the offseason. So we've reached that point where it is nice because you know they're starting to have some success. They're starting to look like a team that's figuring it out at the major league level, but it's all about sustaining that. It's not a 3-year window. It's not a 4-year window. You want to do this long term, and Jackson Holliday is going to be a big part of doing that in some shape or form.
Well, there's no doubt that you'd like to think this is their last 1-1 for a while, right? I mean, they're right up there with the Indianapolis Colts for having 1-1s and, you know, sort of Cleveland Browns sort of awfulness of picking 1-1s. I'll just say this. This is where I defer, right? They threw me out sort of famously 16 years ago. I've never met Mike Elias. I'm not stalking these guys at this point. I'm not that interested to be. I talk to other people. I found other things in my life to do other than bear down on the baseball draft at this point. And I see Elias as a guy who has the pedigree through all of the St. Louis, Houston, all of that stuff to say, you know, whatever he thinks, you know, if there's, he's the one with his nuts on the line here. Now, if it's about signability or money or how much money, or is it really did they take the best player or the best player for them? I think it's a lot easier to throw my hands up in the air on the baseball side of this, because I think on football, the players are more polished. They played more college ball. There's not an international part of it with football. I think baseball is so much more complicated. And to your point, dude, this kid just went to his prom 3 weeks ago. You know what I'm saying? Like he's ready to go come hit off Scherzer. Really? Hit 300 off Scherzer. Really? In the big leagues. I know there's a pipeline for that. And then there's, to your point, well, he could have gone to school. He could have gone to College World Series, gone all that way. But then there's being a 1-1 and the finances that come with that. How much money is this kid going to get?
Oh, it's going to be north of $8 million. I mean, that's where we're talking right now. I think off the top of my head, the bonus, the slot allotment for first overall, it's 8.84, I think it is, you know, but it's well over $8 million. And as I said, unlike the last couple of years where you looked at Colton Cowser, who, by the way, is raking since he was promoted from Aberdeen to Bowie. He's hitting better at Bowie than he did at Aberdeen, which I thought was interesting. But they're fifth overall pick, you know, their first pick last year. And 2 years ago, Heston Kerstad, which we know, of course, had myocarditis and you know, his start to his professional career has been delayed. But, you know, those were both situations where, you know, they did save some slot money that was then reallocated later on in the draft to get some guys over slot, which, you know, it's kind of like the salary cap in that way. I mean, there's different puzzles, pieces to the puzzle that you're trying to fit. But this was a case where, you know, whether he gets the full slot money or not, it's going to be very close. There's not going to be a lot of money saved here, unlike the last couple of years. So, you know, this is very much a case of, you know, even if, you know, some people like Drew Jones more, you know, but Jackson Holliday was considered right there as well. So this wasn't a case where, you know, the Orioles took their seventh player on the board thinking, okay, we'll sign this guy for a little under slot, and then we'll go draft guys in the second, third, fourth round that we'll give more money to. And it still adds up that way. This is a case where they clearly loved what they saw from Holliday. You know, he really popped up from a power standpoint this past year. After, you know, last year, you know, he was kind of regarded as probably a first round pick, but not 1-1 a year ago, you know, or say 8 months ago. But he just showed a really big time ascending power. And when you see that from an 18-year-old who's left-handed hitting, who's a shortstop and projects to stay at shortstop, that's exciting. You know, that's the kind of guy that you look to and say, okay, that's a 1-1. You know, unlike
EJ Surhoffish.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it really, this is where we get into some of those principles that we talk a lot about with football, best player available. And we talked about that with the Ravens taking Kyle Hamilton. I mean, they drafted Marcus Williams. They already had Chuck Clark. They drafted Brandon Stevens a year ago. I mean, safety was by no means their biggest position of need when they went into the draft. But you look at, you know, Kyle Hamilton, who's available at 14th, when you have him on your board as a top five talent, it changes things. What that means as far as what I'm saying with baseball is, yeah, they have Gunnar Henderson and they have Jordan Westberg and they have some infield prospects already in their system, but you draft up the middle, because when you're talking catcher to a lesser extent, but I include catcher in that conversation, but specifically shortstop and center field, if they can play shortstop, if they can play center field, they can move off those positions, right? They can move to a corner, infield or outfield spot. So it's all about having more versatility, more flexibility. And again, people will say, well, Gunnar Henderson's one of the top prospects in baseball, and people think he can stick it short, although there's also an opinion that he'll wind up at third base eventually, kind of like Manny Machado in that way. But that's a good problem to have. If you have a stud shortstop at the major league level and then a stud prospect who plays that same position, you can either move one guy or you can trade one guy. I mean, that's what you want. If you draft a corner outfielder or you draft someone who is already projected to be a second baseman or a third baseman, and then you find they can't really stick at that spot, that's when you get into the problem of, all right, you kind of have a DH type, which is why so many people didn't like the DJ Stewart draft pick years ago, because he was already a left fielder. So where's he going to go if he can't play left field?
Or and that you was just the, suffer their defense.
Sure. Exactly. Right, so, right. And look, I mean, if you have someone who rakes and is an overwhelming hitter, and this was kind of where Ryan Mountcastle, you know, how he was viewed, although he's actually turned into a pretty good first baseman. And some of the numbers support that as well. But the bat's got to be really special then. So that's why you want to draft and be strong up the middle, because you just have so much more positional flexibility as they're going through the minors. And I'll remind you, I just mentioned Ryan Mountcastle. He was drafted as a shortstop. Clearly didn't stick there, but that's what you do instead of targeting someone who is a first baseman or a third baseman or a corner outfielder right off the bat, because there's only so many places they can go from there if it doesn't work out.
They're not seen as being athletic enough to be a 1-1.
Exactly. So
in the same way, a safety would never be a 1-1 in the NFL, right?
Right.
Similar principle. And it's wild watching this, right? Like now they're doing it like the NFL. They used to do it in a closet, you know, via Morse code and pigeon. Recently, they were doing it that way, right? So, I mean, there's some movement. For Luke Jones is here. We're talking about the draft and the Orioles. It's the All-Star break. And trying to get a little clarity on all of this. But I don't have any beef with it. I would just say that whatever their internal timeline is, and again, all of this is like state secrets, like Putin runs the place, right? Like there's no real openness with how the organization is run or how any of these organizations are run. But you take an 18-year-old kid, you know, if you're Mike Elias, it feels to me like Eric DaCosta, you feel like you have your job for a while, because if you're antsy or itchy, you want to get somebody that's going to get to the big leagues quicker and help you right away, especially when they start winning like this. Don Mueller thinks that they can make the playoffs this year and that next year they're going to clear your plans in October. Like people are getting that way over a winning streak. Okay. But now what's falling in? And you talk about Henderson, you talk about DL. We haven't mentioned Means. We haven't talked about Rodriguez, because they're not really a part of this picture. But take a college player that may be on the team this time a year and a half, year, wherever. Maybe that helps you more. But organizationally, I don't think they're there. I think this is very like – Elias is running this thing long game like he has. We've talked about Trey Mancini and our feelings and whether they're going to do something with Santander and trading deadline and all that. Elias is pretty, cold-blooded about all of this as I see it. He's a young old-timer, as they would say, and I think he took the best kid. And I think part of all of this is legacy for him. Is that this thing ever gets turned around, it's going to be because of, like in Houston, Carlos Correa, you know, those guys blossoming and taking a chance on a young player is not something that I'm not shocked that they took a high school player. It feels to me like they're better run now. And I don't say that lightly, because I've criticized them for 30 years about how they've been run, but it feels like John Angelos isn't in there picking baseball players. Yeah, it feels that way to me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any way that John Angelos is picking baseball players because I think there's very much a methodology to what they're doing. And we saw that with
Peter always picked the players, because he would say to Flanagan, we're not taking any Boros. So once you get involved in that way, the owner's involved in picking the players. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like Elias is doing what he needs to do, and that's clear, and there's success here. And that shouldn't shock anybody if you bring in somebody that knows what they're doing. Like, I feel like he knows what he's doing. So I can't Drew Jones it. I mean, I'm just throwing that out as a firecracker. He had his chance if he wanted to stake his claim to him, much like Ozzie every year. You know, you put your name on the player. This is when you show your cards and you see what Mike Elias is made of. This is where he'll be judged.
Well, no question about it. And I mean, and there are always decisions to make. I mean, Mike Elias equated it, you know, when he was on his conference call on Sunday night to, you know, you're making choices at a five-star restaurant. You know, there's going to be at least a few things on the menu where you say, wow, this is probably what I'm going for, but that sounds really good too. And that sounds really good too. And that's where the Orioles were. I mean, they said they had about five players that were in contention for the pick. But I think, you know, when you really look at it seriously, I think it was Holiday. I think it was Drew Jones and probably Tamar Johnson, who ended up going fourth to the Pirates. You know, really good hit tool, but he was a guy that projects a little more to be a second baseman rather than a shortstop. So he could end up being the best player in this draft. You never really know, because
everybody's afraid of the pitchers, aren't they?
Well, this year, I think the pandemic has really complicated things the last couple of years from a development standpoint, from a volatility standpoint. I mean, you know, one of the best pitchers taken in the first round, you know, is coming off Tommy John surgery. I mean, we're seeing that with the Orioles with some of the injuries they've had in their system, let alone talking about college pitchers and high school pitchers. So I think it's just
been nerds and Sigma Dell at the blackjack table. Risk management is. Yeah, let's not bet a one on a guy's arm. That's all, well, right, man?
Well, sure. Well, I think that's evident, because I was getting ready to make the point a couple moments ago. But yes, the Orioles took a high school shortstop with 1-1, which went away from their trend of college hitters, but they went right back to the college hitter well with their next three picks on Sunday night, where, you know, they take Dylan Beavers from Cal, you know, who's an outfielder, big time bat that kind of reminds some people of some Christian Yelich like ability, which would certainly be nice when you're talking about the 33rd overall pick. Max Wagner, you know, who's an infielder from Clemson, 42nd overall, who just had incredible pop-up power as the year went on in the ACC. And then they ended up taking a guy they really wanted last year, outfielder Judd Fabian from Florida. So three college bats, which is what we've seen them do over their first three drafts, that carries into the fourth draft, albeit with the exception being 1-1, which is a pretty big deal. But there are no guarantees. And what I wanted to point out, 2 years ago, Spencer Torkelson was the first overall pick. Tigers just sent him to the minor leagues. The Phillies over the weekend sent two former first overall picks, Mickey Moniak and Mark Appel, back to the minor leagues. These are all guys that went 1-1, and guys that, in the case of Torkelson, 2 years ago, everyone was excited about, and he wasn't considered the Rutschman, like historic kind of 1-1, but he was the pretty strong consensus to go first overall. And 2 years later, he's really scuffling, and he was a college guy, so you never know.
You and I have been fans for a long, long time. I go back to Brian Taylor and Van Poppel, sure, and like BJ Surhoff and like all of that. And we want to equate it to the NBA draft or the NHL draft. And it's just, it's different. You know, it really is different. And it's different over the course of years and over the course of every Sid Thrift and Roland Heeman and Mike Elias and, Epstein, whoever it is, right? Like through all of these years, there's been nothing perfected in any of this, and how these guys 1 year are no good, and the next year they're Brady Anderson and they're hitting 51 home runs, or they're late blossomers or late bloomers. Or, I mean, I remember when Robin Yount came up, you know, sort of. I remember my dad wanting me to go see Robin Yount in 1975, this phenom 18-year-old kid that could do this. And David Clyde was a 17-year-old kid who couldn't do it. And, you know, and the David Clyde story has stayed with me forever, not just because Seasons in Hell is one of the greatest books ever written. People should go read that. But I go back all these years. I mean, I see Nevin, right? We see Ben McDonald broadcasting every night. He, by the way, he's a 1-1 broadcaster, right? He's becoming that, right? Like, literally. And, oh, by the way, Mike Bordick sends his regards. I saw him at the Babe Ruth Museum on Saturday during the Louis Aparicio car collection. I'll tell you what, this sounds like a good time to take a break. Luke and I are talking baseball. We're going to get some football in here. It's All-Star Game Week. We've talked a lot about Lamar Jackson and showing up next week, and I don't know. It feels like on Twitter, it sounds like he's going to show up. Sounds like he's a little defiant and wants to go win. So that would happen next week. Luke is around. I'm around. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. We're going to be taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road beginning August 1st, putting all the plans together for a month-long journey and expedition to see the state again, but see some breweries, have some crab cakes, meet some new people, get out after the plague and have some fun. It's all brought to you by our friends at Window Nation. I'm wearing my certified master installer shirt. I am not a certified master installer. Probably shouldn't wear this shirt. People will be asking me for, all I know is the windows are coming and I'm happy about it. It's a big thanks to Window Nation. Our friends at Goodwill Industries as well. We're going to get Lisa and John on sometime soon here to talk about what's going on with their XL Center, as well as our friends at the Restaurant Association of Maryland. Remind you to get out and eat. There's a Restaurant Week going on in the city right now. There's going to be a Restaurant Week all over the state in September, which I'm going to be promoting throughout August. We're also going to be talking some baseball around here and the All-Star Game. This is one that I'm a little jelly. I like me some Dodger Stadium, and I remember many, many moons ago when I got my first VCR taping the All-Star Game at Dodger Stadium back. Was it 80 or 81? I think it was 80. I think it was. I have to go back and look that one up. Yeah, 81 was the strike year in Cleveland. I remember that one too. Luke and I are going to talk some baseball and some All-Star Game memories, as well as keeping up with the Birds, who are better than we thought they were. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore Orioles baseball and Orioles magic and Baltimore positive. Stay with us.